Before I begin really the report from the trip this year, when Harry Pickup, Melvin Curry, James Finney, and I made the first trip to Ethiopia among our group, Harry and I decided that we would not go back. And we had four good reasons that we weren't going to go back. Number one, it was too far away. Number two, language problem. They speak over 80 different languages in Ethiopia, none of them English. Third, they were too embroiled with the institutional arrangements, the mission program, and all of that. And fourth, we were too old. And at that time, I never dreamed that I would make as many trips to Ethiopia as I have. But early on in those trips, our son Scott began going with me, and Steve Patton. Both of them, younger to me anyway. Well, everybody's younger to me, but younger to me. And the game plan was that when I could no longer go, these two guys would be well acquainted with the work there and partners in it and could continue. Lord willing, next fall, I do not plan to go back. Steve and Scott will go. Scott will go in as I would have normally gone next year, but Steve and Scott would go. And then, if all things work out well, the following year, I would go back again with Scott. But that's to be seen. But that's the plan for the work over there. It'll be heart-rending for me to not be there, but I know that the work will continue, both by the men that are going over and helping with them and the hundreds of faithful gospel preachers that are there on the field now. Another item or two. When we complete service tonight, if you will remain just a minute, I have something that I would like to do with the children to express appreciation to them. And so we'll like to do that after the closing of the service tonight. So don't leave immediately if you don't mind. I have been thrilled to be a part of the things that have gone on in Ethiopia. I have given you reports many times through the years. You know lots about the things that are there. I'll try not to be redundant with the things that we're going to talk about, but there are many of you who are new to this, so I've tried to do both. But I want to emphasize the preaching that is going on in Ethiopia. Thank you for letting me have a part. We go into Addis Ababa and spend the majority of our time in three areas. One in the Hosanna area, which actually embraces two different regions of Ethiopia. And then down at the Sidama area, where we have usually gone to Irgalem, and the last couple of years we have had classes in Awassa, and then finally at Debrazite. And we have classes in all three of those areas. And let me emphasize that we emphasize those classes. Our real game plan is not to go over there and try to walk the streets and convert new people. That we're not too good to do that. But our time is best spent by teaching their teachers. And so classes are held in all three of these areas for the men over there. Ethiopia is changing. It is still a primitive society, but in the towns, building is going on dramatically. The government is involved in a lot of it, these are condos that the government has built and that are available for purchase by the Ethiopians if they can come up with the amounts of money that are necessary for that. But there is construction going on everywhere you look in the towns. Out in the villages, it's not like that, but in the cities, construction is just everywhere you can look. And that's having a terrific impact on the people because it has resulted in inflation. And with inflation, it makes it harder on the people who have limited amounts of income and no real jobs that generate a reasonable return. And so many of our people over there are suffering from the result of the inflation. But Ethiopia is a beautiful country, very high in elevation. Temperature where we are there is very moderate. Out at the extremes, it is very hot and dry. But in the mountain section, the temperature is very modest. As a matter of fact, almost ideal. Many of the people in the countryside still live in the traditional round houses with the grass roofs, and you see those many places, but they're being replaced now with a square building or rectangular with a metal roof, and those are becoming more prevalent in the countryside itself. Construction is still with the eucalyptus poles and mud-daubed walls, but they're using the sheet metal roofing now, and that's replacing much of it. We're there, traditionally, at the first part of September. And September 11, 9/11, is their New Year's Day. And for New Year's Day, they have a feast. Every family gets with other families if necessary, and they have a feast like we do for Thanksgiving and other holidays like that. And the farmers in the countryside drive into town cattle and sheep by the hundreds of thousands. Addis Ababa has about 5.5 million people. And literally, flocks after flocks of sheep and herds of cattle are being driven into the town and sold for the holiday time. And they go right down the street. Don't bother about the cars. The cars will have to take care of themselves. The sheep in separate flocks like that stay with their shepherds, and people come and make their purchases. And here's a man who has bought one, and he's on his way. Now, a number of things have changed in Ethiopia. And among them, in the time that I've been going over there, is the paving in the streets in town. These blocks are hand-carved cubes of stone, about 4 inches in each direction, and then hand-laid, and they always do it in a pattern like this. Beautifully done. And the other thing that has changed dramatically is the food. And I'm happy for that. We lived out of suitcases with peanut butter and power bars and the things of that nature that we took over from the grocery stores here. And now we're able to eat a lot of the things in the, particularly in the hotels that we're able to stay in. You're looking at that's a full half of a chicken, smaller chicken, that has been mashed very flat, breaded, and then fried, and they call it a chicken cutlet. It's not at all like the ones that we get here, but it's edible. Beef cutlet is also a very popular thing, and we find ourselves eating those things quite frequently in the hotels where we stay. Their traditional food is eaten usually on injera, which is their bread form that you see both laying down and in the roll on the thing. And they're spooning what they call peas wat, which is almost like a chili. And they spoon it onto that, and then they share the food, tear off the pieces of injera, and pick up the food with their fingers and eat. And by the way, they eat out of each other's plate quite frequently. It is a very common thing when we sit down with the local men there that one of them will have one dish, another have another, and they're just in and out of each other's dish all the time, and that's routine for them. The two dishes that you're seeing there are actually the same dish. Kitfo, they call it. It's a ground beef, and you can get it in three different levels of preparation. The ones on your right are raw, not cooked at all. And then you can get it slightly cooked or cooked pretty well. And by the way, it is pretty good, but I haven't tried the raw and I don't plan to. Our real efforts in Ethiopia, and we're back to the serious part. Our real effort in Ethiopia is to teach the Ethiopian teachers and preachers and to provide teaching materials for them and to supply support for the teaching program. We have tried, and when I say we, I'm talking about all the Americans that I'm associated with that go over there. We have tried not to ruin Ethiopia with American dollars. It is very easy in a third world country for things to be turned and the interest to be just what can I get out of the Americans who have come. But we do give some support to the men there. Not all who preach get some support, but many of the preachers get some support. Very few of them are supported to where that's their entire living. The only ones that do that are ones that live in the cities themselves, where that's the only avenue that they have for income. But there are hundreds of preachers in the countryside. Most of them have a small plot of ground. They grow many of their own food things on that. And they're given a little bit of a supplement through funds that brethren all over the country have helped with the work that I've tried to do over there. We support a number of the preachers, particularly in the countryside. And I looked the other day, and about one-third of the ones that get any support at all, and it's just a supplement to their income, about one-third of them get the equivalent of $12 U.S. per month as their help. None of them get more than the equivalent of about $50 a month. Most of them are in the $12 to $20 range. And we have tried to keep it to where people are not preaching in order to get American dollars out of it. At present, we know of more than 340 independent congregations in the country. Now, there were congregations before we went that were under the umbrella of two mission churches in Addis Ababa. And they each had support from American churches through a sponsoring church arrangement. We told them from the beginning, we don't do that, and we're not going to try to supplant people who leave. But many of the churches that are there now formerly were associated with the mission programs and have left that and are independent of them now. But most of them are new churches, and I'll tell you more about some of those in a little bit. And there are literally hundreds of very fine, capable men who are preaching the gospel. And they're at different levels. The effort that we have made, and particularly that those that have gone with me have made, has been to teach their teachers. So we go into those three places I told you about and have classes. The classes and the group that was on the trip this time, Adise, Alamu, and Zerahun, who are just three of the finest guys and real good friends to me and to Scott and to Steve. They have worked with us through the years and are very fine people. We loaded up the SUV from the hotel and made the trip to the countryside, and we had 157 men in the classes at Hosanna, 104 in Owassa, and 54 at Deborahsite. There could have been more, but those are the ones that were invited to the classes, and for most of them, they were given a little bit of a supplement for transportation to come in and for food and bed while they were in the towns. You wouldn't want the beds, by the way, or the food, but they make it fine. But those classes are critical in my mind. We go and spend about 3 days in each of the places and have classes. Usually we divide the groups into two parts, those that are more experienced and those that are less experienced. And then one of us will take one group and the other takes the other group for a day and a half, and then we swap groups and teach our same material to the other group. But you do this year after year, and we're not the only ones going. Other men are going and teaching. Not everybody uses the same program that we're doing, but all of them are doing some kind of teaching and admonishing to the brethren there. You do this over and over and over, and you've covered a variety of topics and given a number of opportunities for discussions and questions, and those men have blossomed dramatically. And I am not going to say a lot about the classes. I'm going to show you some pictures of them. But I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. But that's where we spend the time when we're there. And that's where our emphasis is in teaching their teachers. In Hosanna, we divided the group into two parts, as I told you. This is the more experienced group that was in one meeting place. Here we had everybody together. What we would do is, at the end of the day, we'd bring everybody together and have an open time for them to ask any question, not just on the class material, but any question that they wanted to, and we'd have a brief discussion time. This is the group that were not necessarily younger men, but less experienced men. And the ones on the front left there, I'll mention later in the presentation. In Owassa, we had 104 men, and again, the division of the groups and the classes. By the way, we're in the Paradise Hotel in Owassa, and you should have been there, because it really is not paradise, but whatever it is. And some of us get old and sit down while we're doing some of the teaching, not all the time. And Scott, of course, participates quite well. At Deborahsite, we had 54 men, and most of them were in the class that had to have translation. They did not speak English, and that was the greater number. We had a handful of men there, most of them out of Addis Ababa, who were able to speak English well enough that we had a separate class for them and did not use an interpreter. We did it only in the English. The first Sunday that I was there three different Sundays. And the first Sunday that I was there, I went with the little group that meets at in the heart of the city in an area called Meghananya. And this little group of about 25 now is struggling primarily because of a meeting place. That's the hardest thing of all in the cities. Costs are ridiculous. They're very high and not available. People don't want to rent to a church. They don't want a church meeting there. And if it's in the neighborhood and a vacant house, the owners don't want to rent to it because the neighbors don't want a church in their community like that. So it's a very difficult thing. This little group had been meeting at a private college that the preacher himself actually teaches one class in that college. And they were able to get a room once a week like in that, and that's where we met. Unfortunately, the college was sold, and the new owners have their own church that meets in the property, and they wouldn't let them continue, so we don't know what's going to happen to that group and where they will be able to meet. Cost to rent a place in the town area there was just absolutely prohibitive. This is the preacher. His name is Adise. If you remember from a report last year, he's the guy who came in from the countryside and worked at the Bole Mission as guard at their gate and lived for 6 years in a guardhouse that was very little larger than this speaker stand. It was so small that he literally could not lie down inside it. And he spent 6 years there while he was going to school and working. Wonderful guy, very capable, very able. You remember Philippos? 2 years ago, we came back and I showed you the pictures of the house that he was living in, which he had gotten from the peasant community, the homeless type of area. And he had lived in it for several years. It was literally falling apart. And people here in this congregation raised some money for him. They had told me that they could build him a house for $2,000. And that amount of money was given and sent to them. What we found out was the $2,000 would not complete the house. Here's the house, their old house being torn down, and the new one going up. And when Steve and I were there last year, they had completed the house with a metal roof, but were not able to put doors and windows in it, and they were as expensive as the whole house was. Steve and I were inside. There is no furniture. That is a dirt floor. But they are absolutely elated with it. It's such a step up from what they had been living in, and they are so happy to be there. Out back was the kitchen, which was an old round house, and they do the cooking in it, and it's still there. This is this year's picture of that kitchen, and they do now have the doors and windows. They're fiberglass and metal, and the inside. This is the family of Philippos. His wife was away at the store when we were there and didn't get her picture in it, but we did get their cow, and you'll see the calf, and they've got a goat, and they just roam the neighborhood and live it in the yard, and everybody gets along. There's the cow and the calf. Inside the house, there's a pad on the floor, and that's their bed. Things are just hung around on the walls or sitting on the floor. But they are absolutely elated to have it. And when you stop there, the neighborhood turns out and everybody wants to come and see what's going on. And you can get a crowd very easily there. Quite to our shock, we got to ride on the first expressway in East Africa. Coming back from Owassa to Debrecite, we were able to get on the expressway, and it's under development now. Looks just much like our expressways here, and it is wonderful to be able to ride down the road and not have to worry about cows, sheep, carts, people, all the other things that use the highway just exactly like the cars do. The Sunday that we were out in the countryside, we spent in Hosanna. Tagasa Shimebo is the preacher there, and he's doing a very good job. They have a little house that they have rented for the last 2 years, and they meet in that house. And to share the cost, a family pays part of the rent and uses part of the house, but they have a nice room that we're able to meet in. Access to it is down a dirt road that you walk and all. We preached and taught the Bible class on that Sunday and had a nice little group there, and they seem to be doing quite well. As a matter of fact, I'm quite proud of what Tagasa has been able to do. He has some family that are working in South Africa, and one child that's in America somewhere, I forget where. And I know that they have given them some help also. And he has bought a plot of ground in the town and has built a house. I haven't seen it, but he has built a house for himself there. And quite to our thrill and surprise, we went to a place where the church has bought a little piece of ground. Here's the roadway that we walked, and after we got as close as we could in the vehicle, we got out and did a good bit of walking down a trail and came to a place that was all van-covered and all, and Scott's looking in at where the gate is to this piece of property, and they bought this little piece of property, and plans are to erect a building on it. That is a long-range plan, but I commend them for the efforts that they are making in that direction and hope that it will be able to be done. It would be a real benefit to the work in that area. Now I want you to note some of the preachers that are there. You've heard some of these men before. A fellow that continues to amaze us is Dimaka. Dimaka is in his mid-50s. He has 12 children. All of them are grown and away from home except the last one. His wife was terribly sick during the last year. She was in the hospital for a period of time. She is better now. But the work that he does continues to astound all of us. I wish I could tell you that every preacher in Ethiopia, I wish I could tell you that every preacher in the world does the kind of thing that I'm going to tell you about him. But as Steve and I have shook our heads and wondered how in the world does he get it done, let me just review a few things. He preaches in a countryside church out in that Hosanna area. Not right in Hosanna, but in a small village named Tita, T-I-T-A. They have 300 members in the congregation, with children about 380 in attendance. Each week, he has a class for the ladies, a class for the men, a class for the youth, and a class for the children. On Tuesdays every week, he and his wife visit the weak members in the congregation and try to encourage them. during the winter months. He works with Johannes Adise, who lives in another community fairly close to them. And they have a weekly meeting with 27 preachers from that area that are out of 17 different congregations. And they meet every week and have a study together. Omoshalako is an area nearby. And until recent years, there was only one congregation in that area. Now there are four new congregations in that area. And Damaka goes there once each month and strengthens the brethren, usually stays 2 or 3 days and works with the brethren there. Boshana is a relatively new area, and they now have 10 congregations meeting in Boshana. And Shekana is near Boshana. And before we started going to Ethiopia, there were 5 congregations in that area that were under the Bole Mission Program. Presently, there are now 16 congregations in that area with an estimated 2,000 members in the 16 congregation. In addition to, and by the way, Damaka goes to Boshana and Shekana quarterly and spends a few days in each of those. Then some members from that general area were moved to an extreme south area, almost to the border of Uganda and the Sudan. And they wanted somebody to come and preach and teach. Damaka has been going there. He makes trips twice each year to 2 different places, 4 trips. It takes 2 days for him to get there. Initially, when he was going, the closest he could get by vehicle made it necessary for him to walk 8 hours to get to some of the churches and 12 hours to the other place, walking to get to the place. So it takes a 2-week trip, and I don't know how he finds the time for it, but he does it 4 trips a year to those places, and there are now 4 congregations in the Dawaro area with about 300 members in the 4, and Kanta has 2 congregations with 180 members there. He goes 2 trips to each year. Among the things that we have done is we left money for him to make 2 of those trips to the distant areas. And by the way, the church where he preaches at Tita helps to support some of the men who preach in the local churches around them. They baptized 16 at Tita last year, and in his work in the various places that I've mentioned, there were 75 baptisms last year. You met a guy, he's the man from down in the Sadama area, who had heard about our having classes in the Hosanna area, and he had ridden a bus and another bus and had looked for Marcus to get him to talk to people and get him to come to his area and teach. What has resulted was this. He reported that there were Christians meeting in 21 different places. Most of it was just one family at each of those places. And no American preachers had been there for 40 years. Steve and I were the first ones to go there. I think it was 04, Steve, when we went. The first time. At present, there are 65 independent congregations in that Sidama area that are working closely. Four of them are new to this year. In addition to that, a guy knew some people who were down at the border of Kenya, two different locations there. And he has been making two trips to each of those. It takes him 2 days by their buses to get to each place. So 2 days each direction. And he makes four trips a year down to work with the people in those areas. Numbers of people have been converted. Marcus Forday lived in the Hosanna area, but some brethren from there had been relocated to the Kaffa area. By the way, coffee came from that area, and that's the origin for coffee is here in Ethiopia. Some brethren moved there. Marcus Forday has made trips there for the last several years and preached the gospel there. And he has now made plans to leave his wife and children in the Hosanna area. He's going to live in the Kaffa area and plans to make four trips a year home to spend time with his family so that he can support the work out in the Kaffa area even more. I could tell you about Tesfai, who has done so much in so many different places, who loves to go to places where the gospel had never gone before and spread the gospel in new areas. And I could tell you about Ayala. Ayala is a young man. If your memory is good, his was the second wedding that I participated in. And you're talking about a shock time. He got married during the classes that we were having at Hosanna. He did it at the end of the day on a Saturday. And here was this sweet little girl who had never seen any of these men before, who was ushered in with one or two of her friends as her helpers in her gown, in her wedding gown, and stood before me and others that she had never seen, with 150 men sitting out here as her audience for her wedding, and they got married. They now have one child and another on the way. He preaches in a little community. He is suffering financially, and I mean that literally, but he is continuing to work. And to his credit, on the front left in the picture you're seeing are four men who have been converted in the last year. All four were preachers in the Apostolic Church in Ethiopia. The fellow in the center with the kind of stomach that my wife fusses at me about was the general supervisor for that church, for that area. He had a handsome salary from those churches. He gave it all up. He's now a New Testament Christian and is trying to tell other people about it. They are four converted preachers who are converting numbers of their own people and family members and church members, and are devoted to the gospel. He told me, money does not answer the question. The question is, what do you have to do to go to heaven? Those are just some of the men. As I say, I wish I could say everybody is doing no. But there are numbers and numbers of men in Ethiopia who are sharing the gospel. The last Sunday we were there, Scott worked with the church at Kara, where Wubashet is the regular preacher. They have a good little group there. And he had a good time with them and afterwards gave out the pictures of the children here that you sent with me over there. And Janelle was upset that I failed to bring one of those back. She keeps a kind of a little folder, and I don't have a copy of the pictures that we took. But the children are thrilled to get those. During that same day, I went out to Barayu, where there had been some problems. Not unusual. I hope it's unusual over there. But the problem came over the preacher. And some brethren pulled off and started separately. And I met with them. Charla had to tell us how to get there. We had ridden over an hour to try to get to the area and could not find the location. Called him. He walked out to the road, met us, and led us back, a long walk, by the way, to get back. And they have bought a little piece of property out in the boondocks and have put up a building on it, the metal building on the right. I estimate that building was about 12 or 14 feet wide and at best about 18 feet long. It has one door, no windows, and we had 42 people in the service that morning. And they all seemed to be happy. We gave the children their cards, got a picture of them afterwards. And I'll tell you about this little girl later. Let me give you a little bit of the culture of the community. When we first went to Irgalem, we taught in a government building there where they have different classes. One of the teachers there, a guy named Gensamo, one of the teachers there, young man, fine young man, sat in on some of our Bible classes, got interested, has been converted, has established a congregation there in Irgalem, and continues with that. And he asked that Scott and I would help with his wedding this year. It was a hoot, to say the least. They told us to be ready at the hotel at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. And the van was going to come with some of the people from the family, and we would all go and start the procedure. The first ones got there at 10:40. We left the hotel about 5 minutes till 11. We drove to where the groom was with one of his kinsmen, and the family was gathering there with where the groomsman was, where the bridegroom was. We got out, everybody greeted, then we all went inside. They had borrowed chairs from all the neighbors, and there were chairs all the way around the room, and we sat in the chairs around the room and sang several hymns, had a prayer, and a joyous occasion. And then we came outside. This is Gensamo in the center and his groomsmen with him. They loaded into a friend's car, the little car, little white car there. And the bridegroom and the two groomsmen were going to ride in that. We went for less than a quarter of a mile before that car broke down. We're on the side of the road for another 45 minutes, maybe an hour. They were on phones trying to find some friend that had a car that could come and pick us up, or pick them up and start the procedure over. We finally gave up. There aren't many of them have a car. We finally gave up, and Scott and I rented a car from the same place that we had rented the van from. And we, in turn, drove on away. We're on our way to the bride, by the way. We stop on the side of the road, and a few minutes later, in the new car, comes the bridegroom and the groomsman, and we stop on the side of the road. They go across the street, buy the equipment to decorate the car with streamers and balloons and all of this kind of thing. And then we go to the apartment complex, the condo complex. By the way, they love satellite dishes. We went to the condo complex where the bride's aunt lived on third floor. We all traipsed up to third floor, but the crowd was so big we couldn't get in. We stood in the hallway outside in the area. We could see inside. The mob that was there couldn't see the bride. She was seated over at the side. But there was a guy with a great big old-timey video recorder on his shoulder making videos of the bride, and another buddy with a big light hanging, holding it for the lighting. In due time, the bridal party came out. We go down to the ground. They do a little ceremony around, dancing and clapping and singing and all, and then they load up. We go to a building, and the bridal party comes in. The bridegroom and bride sit in chairs in the center of the building there, and their groomsmen right behind them. The audience seated on either side. Scott preached the wedding sermon for them, and then it was my turn to talk to them again about wedding, and then we all went up on the platform, and there they made their vows. They didn't do a repeat after me because of the language, but I did the vows and they did the I do's. Then there was the ring ceremony, and then following that, the bridegroom signed the wedding document, and she signed it, and then when I signed it, they were officially married. That's the time at which the marriage is completed. Then they had three men come up and sign as witnesses for the groom, and three to come up and sign as witnesses for the bride. And then they seated all of that group up on the platform and brought them packaged food, and then had packaged food for everybody else. By now, it's 5 in the afternoon. It is an all-day affair, but they're not in any hurry. Whatever time it takes, we'll just do it. After all of that, they came to Scott and me and said, "We're taking you back to the hotel. You don't even need to stay for the cutting of the cake." So we didn't get the whole picture, but we got a big part of the picture. I want you to know a little about the culture, a little about the people. I want you to know a lot about the preachers and a lot about the classes that we try to do there for the planting of the gospel in the hearts of people, that they can stand for the Lord. Thank you for listening so kindly. I've been to Ethiopia 18 times. In the 18 trips, I have witnessed one baptism. There have been thousands and thousands of baptisms. But we teach them. They in turn teach the Ethiopian people. And many, many are being converted. Literally, thousands have obeyed the gospel. And as I indicated, we know of over 340 independent congregations. Some of those are small, but many of them are 50 to 150, and a number of them are 200 or 300, and some of them over 500 members. The gospel has been powerful in that country. You've had a part with it, and I appreciate it. And it's been a thrill for me to be a part with it. As I say, I've witnessed one baptism over there. But it's always a thrill when somebody makes the decision to obey the gospel. And it could be that tonight there's somebody in our audience who has never named the name of Christ and would like to do so tonight. If you truly are a believer in Him as the Son of God, penitent for your wrongs, would make the good confession that you're identifying Him as Lord and Master and ruler in your life, you could be baptized tonight for the forgiveness of sins. And if that's your desire and your wish, we invite you to come while we stand together and sing.
Thy heart be saved, oh, tonight. Oh, why not tonight? Oh, why not tonight? Will thou be saved? Then why not tonight? Tomorrow's sun may never rise to bless the long deluded sight. This is the time, oh then be wise, be saved, oh tonight. Oh, why not tonight? Tonight, will thou be saved? Then why not tonight? Our blessed Lord refuses none who would to Him their souls unite. Be
seated.